everyone, welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening in the greatest county in the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I work at the best high school in the world. On this podcast, we have Lupita Alcala from the California Department of Education. She has a great interview and an inspiring story, so we're excited to share her story. On our next podcast, we have more amazing educators, so we're excited to share those stories, so be sure you tune in. Thank you. Great. Hi, everyone. I'm with an amazing lady. I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Lupita Cortez Alcala, Chief Deputy Superintendent at the California Department of Education.
It's so awesome to see you at the California College Affordability Summit. Can you talk a little bit about why it's important?
Gosh, it's incredibly important because not only personally, but professionally, right? I was one of those students that without financial aid, I wouldn't have been able to attend and complete college. And so many other students in California that I represent, English learner, immigrant, came to this country when I was 3, lived in Palo Unified School District and went to great public schools because I know my parents wanted us to grow up in a district that had a good reputation for having great schools because they didn't know how to navigate the American education system, and they wanted to make sure that we had not only good teachers and a good education, but we did have an opportunity to go to college, but they didn't know how to help us how to navigate that. And so I also was fortunate to also grow up in Orange County and Saddleback Unified, another really good school district that allowed me to do well in school. Mm-hmm. And so, like many students, you know, if you surround yourself by peers or counselors or teachers that provide you a great advice on how to do this, you know, how to get through not only being eligible for admission, but how to complete the application and all of the, not only for financial aid, but for admission, then a student has the right start, right? I was lucky to be surrounded by friends that were also going to college. Mm-hmm. I had visited one campus, maybe two in San Diego, so those are the only ones that I was knew about or was aware of, and so those are the only two that I applied to. I was pretty involved in high school, community service activities, and I ended up taking Spanish APs, and I said I was an English learner, so when I was in kindergarten, there wasn't a lot of English language development or bilingual education, and so I ended up flunking kindergarten along with my sister flunked first and my brother flunked second, because that was the way they provided additional assistance. I thought we just needed to learn the language further.
Yeah.
I obviously had some great teachers, and I always talk about Mrs. Peterson. I had her in second and third grade, and you know, I just tell she not only cared about me, but my family. So along the way, I've had people that have cared about me and my family and my success. And so mm-hmm. I attribute my success not only to my parents wanting the best for me and us wanting to make them proud and because of the sacrifices that they've made, but also because of the people along the way that have helped us, whether they're our friends or teachers, that have kind of geared us in the right direction. But it's a long process if you don't know all the intricacies around it. And like many immigrants, you know, children, we often help our parents write letters and our parents, you know, with legal issues or and so that helped prepare me a little bit for having to fill out sort of the FAFSAs and the admissions and other documentation. But they weren't really, they couldn't help us in that endeavor, and so we were sort of on our own.
Yeah, because you probably had to, like, translate a lot of stuff for them.
We did. We had to translate a lot of things, and we had to, you know, sometimes figure things out or help. We advocated for our families and their parents because we dominated the language better than they did, right? So this conference is one of a kind. It's the first where K-12 and higher ed and two state agencies come together to try to support students in the transition from high school to college and in not only financial aid, but how to get admitted and complete, right? So
yeah.
There's a focus on, okay, so what if you do fill out the FAFSA and we get someone to do that? So is it enough? And what we've heard today on the panel with the students is that they're struggling with food and housing insecurity. And think about it, 55%, and in some districts, 99 or 100% of students are considered low income based on free and reduced price meals, which is a very low standard.
Yeah.
So if they're struggling in high school when they're living with their parents as a family, you put them out on their own, and the reality of trying to pay rent and have food and your basic needs met is incredibly difficult, right?
Yeah.
And many students end up struggling between working so much and really not dedicating the time or energy to the schoolwork, or just quitting altogether, or taking a really long time. And at some point, your aid runs out, right?
Yeah.
You've got 4 years of Cal Grant, 6 years of Cal Grant, and then you have loans that you have to take out because it never covers everything, right?
That's true.
So, and you know, in the state, we've done a great job of providing assistance for tuition and fees, but not as great in providing, you know, assistance for living expenses, right?
Yeah, and with the cost of living going up too, it's harder for our college students because they need more grant money and all that to pay it off, and they have to choose from books or should I eat today? Like, it's so sad.
It's hard. What we heard from the student panel today is one student faints because she was down to one meal a day.
Wow.
Another student said that, you know, they have to pick between supporting their family or buying the book. What we heard today was just so real and raw, that students are going hungry or not finding the right place to live that they can pay for, and the real struggle to stay in school. The athlete that has to negotiate the sports, school, the undocumented student that really can't work and can't get federal loans, right? So they're dependent on, you know, any scholarships are out there for undocumented students. And so that struggle is real, and we need to do a better job, really, of not only meeting students' needs in terms of the entire cost of college, but, you know, our systems, Department of Education and California Student Aid Commission and our higher ed systems, community college, CSUs and UCs and the privates, we all need to do a better job of helping to support students in the transition and the completion of a degree.
Yeah. I'm always trying to figure out and help our undocumented students and English learners. Can you give me some advice on how I can help them if they're trying to navigate, whether it's learning English or trying to go to college? What's the best advice you can give me from your own experience?
So I think that for a long time, the pedagogy was let them learn English first and then get into higher level courses. And we just don't have that time to waste. And not only that, but students need rigorous academic work, and they need to be supported in that. So I think they need to take the college prep courses, and they need assistance in with their English and with writing and analyzing in a different language, right?
Right.
And we need to provide them supports not only in high school but in college. I don't think we should hold students back because their English isn't perfect or they don't know exactly all the grammar rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes there, you know, is the opportunity to take English language development courses, and some students thrive in that and do well, but I think they can't be denied access to the college prep courses that they need in order to advance into community college and to a four-year university. I think that we often, as English learners, we think that we're not as capable or as smart, and that there's gaps in our education, and I think you need to just allow them and permit them and give them permission to acknowledge that and say, yeah, there's gaps in our education. It doesn't mean that we're not smart or not capable or can't do it like anyone else. Right.
Right.
And I think we are our own, you know, we our own self-esteem or our own sort of imposter syndrome sometimes creeps in. And I think we need to acknowledge that. I know that when I went to Harvard for my School of Education, to get a master's degree in administration planning and social policy, one of the first things that we were told is, you know, you're going to feel like you have the Harvard flu. And I said, oh, yeah, what's the flu? When you don't feel, you wonder why you got in. You wonder, yeah, this is hard, or people are really smart, or, you know, I shouldn't be here, or I'm not sure. You know, you start doubting yourself. And
yeah.
They told us, be careful of that, because you're going to feel it at some point, and you shouldn't.
Kind of like buyer's remorse.
Yes, you should acknowledge it, but you should also say, no, I'm good enough, and yes, I'm smart enough, and yes, I can, you know, articulate it in my way, and I have my life experiences that can help inform that issue, that policy. And so we were warned, and I think we need to do that more for students. They may say, hey, there are gaps. You may not know that literary, you know, author or that architect, because that wasn't something that was in our community or mentioned, or our parents didn't know, or it wasn't part of our cultural capital. But it doesn't mean you're not smart because you don't know that factoid, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people make English learner students or students, immigrant students, feel like they're not smart, or they're not as knowledgeable or incapable because they don't know certain things.
Yeah, when in reality they're really smart. They're balancing two languages and they're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
I was just at Harvard this summer, and it was funny because we took a tour and they made us call it Harvard. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful school, so I'm glad that you got to attend there.
Yeah.
I've been trying to promote it with my students, so hopefully some of them get in. It's a great school.
It is a beautiful school. It was it was an amazing experience. I've had a few experiences in my life where I've felt like I thrive by learning from others, right?
Yeah.
And Harvard is a place where it brings really, really amazing people together from all around the world. I worked with Governor Davis at the time, and it brings people from all around the U.S. and other, and even international. And you just have the best minds, and I thrive like many others thrive on learning. You know, I obviously hope I contribute too, but I learn a lot from my colleagues. And part of the experience is learning from your professors,
mm-hmm.
but from learning from your peers and your colleagues, right? And through their experiences and what they have to offer. In fact, I got my very first job in Sacramento because of another student that was there getting a master's that had worked with the California School Boards Association.
Oh,
and
wow.
said, hey, they're looking for a position. I wasn't doing that. I wanted to work on education policy, and she knew that. And I ended up not getting the policy analysis position that I wanted. I ended up getting the legislative analyst position, but
yeah.
it started my life on this government affairs trajectory and lobbyist trajectory that got me back into policy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the people around you that want to help and support you and acknowledge, you know, what you can do and where you can go.
Yeah, it's all about networking too. Can we talk about your why? Like, what's your why, and why do you think it's so important for people to find their why?
You know, that's a great question. I think my why is I want to contribute to my community and the opportunities that have been afforded to me and to my family. And I think it's a disgrace and a shame for students not to know the process, to not be aware of what to do to get into college, what form they need to fill out, or get assistance. I think I see everything through an equity lens, and I know that there's too many African-American and Latino students and other Asian and some Native American students that are just not getting access at the same rates. So access and opportunity has been a great passion of mine. A lot of the work that I did at UCSD when I was there getting a bachelor's, I worked early academic outreach, and I met students in middle school and high school. I thought I wanted to be an attorney. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but
yeah.
I wanted to be an attorney in political science and majored in political science and minored in Spanish literature. And sometimes somebody asked me, what do you want to litigate? And I'm like, I don't know. But what did seem to appeal to me is I was involved in Mecha, and one of the activities that the Mechistas did was bring students onto campus for the big high school conference. Between that and working for early academic outreach, I realized what a void of information there was out there for students of color and first-generation low-income students. And I really thrived and enjoyed that, and I felt like I contributed and gave back. And I didn't note at the time that all of those experiences and those jobs that I had talking to middle school students and high school students, I mean, they would take all the classes I told them to take to college prep, and then I'd come back, and they had D's and F's in every single one because they were ready to take those courses. They weren't prepared. They didn't get the support they needed. And I guess I decided to focus on educational policy because I felt like there are policies that needed to be changed. And my why is I sought leadership positions and policy positions that can affect, you know, statewide change. And so I'm a chief deputy superintendent at the Department of Education, and I was formerly the executive director of the California Student Aid Commission. And I do feel that our agencies need to work together along with community colleges. We need to share data. We need to get the data out. We need to really share student experiences and be the campaign, communications campaign on behalf of 6.2 million students and a million, you know, adult students. This information, you know, shouldn't be a secret and only accessible to some.
Yeah.
We should have policies in the state that it's part of your high school experience to graduate. Part of your high school experience should be to fill out the FAFSA.
Yes.
Part of your high school experience should be to have a plan for after high school. It should be, are you going to a four-year? Are you going to the military? Are you going into some post-secondary education for an AA or a vocational degree? Are you going on to a four-year college? Or are you going to the community college and help those students enroll in those courses? I do think that we need to even look at the four-year model of high school and the four-year model of college. And there are some really interesting things happening in, for instance, the higher ed students, and the state superintendent, Tommy Thurman, is working on supporting a demonstration project in Fresno. And it's really thinking about a new system in which the transition, there is, it seems like, the transition from high school to college is seamless, and you're just attending in a gradual, regular manner that gets you that AA and that BA degree at the end of the road, and there is no stoppage, and you know, all the complexities like behind the curtain, like the student's not going to feel it or see it. They're just going to be supported through this process. There are some really neat things happening in the state with dual enrollment and early college, and there's this demonstration project that the superintendent Tony Thurman is supporting along with his higher ed colleagues that would really transform the way we see high school and college, and it would provide like one system, one seamless system where a student wouldn't feel and wouldn't have to struggle through the differences in systems, and you know, financial aid and admission would be sort of seamless and just an obvious transition. A clear transition, as if you're going from your feeder middle school to high school. You get your classes, you know, ahead of time. And I think we need to really think about a model that sort of merges the two in some way, if not, you know, practically, so that the student doesn't see and feel the transition and struggle through the different applications. And it should just be like a seamless transition. And I think that's where we lose a lot of students. I mean, I'm not going to be happy if we congratulate ourselves 100% of the student population fill out a FAFSA if they're not using their grant because they're failing to be able to transition to a post-secondary plan or pathway.
I totally agree.
I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that getting every single student to fill out a FAFSA is the way is what we need to do. I absolutely believe we should start there.
Yeah.
At the very least, to give everyone a fighting chance, right? Because we all know, and I've often talked to my colleagues that run big school districts, the largest school districts, and I say, you know, I know we're working as a state, and you're working as a district to absolutely get every student to fulfill the A through G requirements, and getting them graduate and providing this pathway. But if they don't fill out the FAFSA and they're low income, they're actually not going to be able to go to college. Like, that's going to stop them.
Yeah.
And even if they fill out the FAFSA, if we don't help them with that transition, like really support them in that, and that's what the students were talking about today, relationships. Know your students, know their stories, and know how to articulate what they need. Because every student is different. Every student on the panel today was different and had different needs. And we need to do that. You know, what do we expect? We expect what we get for what we provide. So a lot of school districts don't have counselors that have the time, because there's 1 to 500 or more
for you,
to be able to get to know every student and their story and what they need, and to put a plan together, because they're busy getting them academic classes, getting them to graduate. But our job
and also
is
the
done.
Social-emotional we're
and social-emotional, because there's mental health issues in K-12 and higher ed, obviously. And we're expecting more and more students to get a post-secondary degree because of the jobs that are changing in the workforce. I mean, I don't, you know, I think everybody understands what a degree does, it can do for someone, and how it can lift a family out of poverty, right?
Yeah.
And themselves and their families out of poverty. But what we fail to do is support the student through that process, especially a first-generation low-income student that would otherwise not know, because they don't have a family member, other person, or their parents haven't gone through the system. So I think there's more to be done. I think this conference is the beginning of that effort, that multi-agency effort, and that K-12 higher ed effort. But there's things that we can absolutely do statewide that would allow us to have a level playing field. And what I mean by that is students should have access to A through G coursework. They should have access to rigorous career technical education courses. They should have access to different pathways that lead into different career options and internships, as well as the ability to have someone help them fill out the FAFSA. And and ultimately, upon graduation, the degree shouldn't be the ultimate goal in high school. It should be what's next.
Right.
And how do we support our student to that? And we as a state need to support school districts and provide them the resources they need in order to effectuate that. We can't just say, do less with more. Good luck, you know, counselor with 500 in accomplishing everything I think I envision you should do. It's what are we doing as a state to support additional resources to those schools to provide them that support.
And I saw an article from NACAN, and it said they should hire more school counselors to help support the FAFSA, and I totally agreed with it, because I was thinking of a story that happened last year. One of our students was trying to do his FAFSA, and he couldn't do it. So one day I called him out of class, and I was like, I really need you to come see me. Well, I guess he kind of got upset, and he threw his paper. The teacher calls me, and she was like, just so you know, the student's upset. I'm not sure what happened, but I think it has to do with FAFSA. I don't think he's mad at you. So he comes to my office, and we talk, and I was like, what's going on? And he says, Ms. Grijalva, I haven't talked to my parents in 2 years. And I said, why not? He says, well, I did something, and it wasn't even that bad, and I got kicked out of the house, and my mom won't talk to me, and so I don't live with my parents. He said he was living on a friend's couch. So then I said, well, how can I help you? And he's like, well, I want to file a FAFSA, I want to go to college, but I can't, because I can't do it without my parents' taxes. So we ended up calling his mom on speakerphone, and then his mom was like, my mijo, I missed you, I haven't talked to you. And he's like, well, mom, I want to go to college, but I need your taxes. And she's like, you want to go to college? And then she starts crying. He's like, and mom, I want you to come to my graduation. And then she's crying, he's crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like a bonding moment over FAFSA. He comes by like the week before graduation, and he's like, FAFSA brought us together. My mom's now going to my graduation. He's like, and I'm going to college. And he was so excited. Like, I just think, like, if we had more counselors that could reach out to those students, especially knowing those special circumstances, think how we could change, like, the whole system.
Well, that's not clear. That was a beautiful story. And I think there is some trepidation to filling out the FAFSA. You know, even though, or the California Dream Act. And in California, a lot of students don't realize, they think that all the doors are closed, because many doors have been closed to them. And they don't realize that there is, in California, it's an entitlement, right? To, regardless of who you are, if you meet the same requirements that any other student does, and you happen to be undocumented, you still get access to the California Cal Grant, right?
Yeah.
And you may not have access to the Cal Grant, but there are some scholarship opportunities for Dreamers students. So one of the things that a lot of Dreamer students don't realize, that they don't realize that they can get, they think that it's a state thing, and they're so afraid. And with all the federal rhetoric and things happening, it gets even worse.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
I guess I want to thank our education teams. You know, I want to thank the counselors and the principals and the teachers and, you know, the school classified employees, because all of them together have supported and assisted students. There are probably some of those classifications I've just named that it isn't in their job description, you know, to, and maybe even student interns too, and librarians and you know, even sometimes the, you know, the service folks on the campus, they all have helped support students in a way that may go unnoticed and people don't even recognize because it's not in the job description.
Right.
So I just wanted to say thank you to them, because it takes an entire team, entire school, district, it takes the region to really provide a little bit of their time, a little bit of their energy to support a student in wherever they're at, you know, and that goes for, like, the, you know, after school folks too, that have different programs on campuses, because they also listen to help students. And I guess the only thing I'd want to add, so in addition to thanking them for all of that, is that we can do more and we should do more. And this conference is amazing because it's a call to action. And I think that there are systems that we can put into place statewide that would guarantee that a student would get access to financial aid if they're eligible, right?
Right.
And we can implement systems regionally, locally, that would allow that transition to be seamless through relationships with our communities, right? Our high schools, with our community colleges and different universities, maybe private schools. There's never enough time and never enough people to do those things, but if we, the State Department of Education, and all of the folks here can be helpful, we'd like that. You know, we have access to the policymakers, we have access to the Department of Finance, we have access to a state superintendent of public instruction, which can help support you. And what do you need? What can we do from Sacramento statewide? Is it to mandate that FAFSA is completed? Is it to provide you resources to meet the challenge of the mandate?
Right.
I know people don't like mandates, but, you know, sometimes there are just things that should be guaranteed, right?
Right.
It shouldn't be for those that did it on time. All the rules around, you know, Cal Grants, you know. For instance, you know, we have a March 2nd deadline, but the Pell Grant doesn't have a deadline until the year, up until like the June of the year you're in college. You can still apply.
Yeah.
You know, we have timelines on how old you can be. We have timelines that if you go beyond a year after high school, then it's not guaranteed, right? You have to apply as part of a lottery, you know, kind of like, you know, a system. And and the competitive Cal Grant, you know, positions. And so I think we can and should do more as a state. We want to support and provide resources, and we need your help and we need your ideas, really. We want to know what can we do, what should we do, what do you need us to do?
And I appreciate that it's easy to access you guys as far as like bridging the gap. It's not like you're just out in Sacramento and, you know, we don't talk. And I appreciate that you come to these things and you talk to educators and that you're actually there in the trenches with us and you understand our work. So thank you so much for all that you do. At the end of our podcast, we like to share the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you at least name one thing that made you happy this week?
You know, I think it's being here, you know, at this conference and listening to students. And in spite of their struggles, they're here telling their story and they're being courageous and they're succeeding.
Yeah.
You know, I think in spite of what they describe and the challenges they have with food and housing insecurity and working and challenging and time management and fiscal management, they're getting through and they're making it happen and they're reaching out and they're asking for support and assistance and we're answering the call.
Yeah, definitely a call to action. I have to say my Sunshine Spotlight was just getting the opportunity to talk with you. I appreciate you. You're always so busy, and I know that you taking time out of your day was probably hard to fit in, but I appreciate it, and I thank you so much.
Wow, I'm privileged and honored that you wanted to talk to me, and I know there's probably a lot of us that you could speak to that could probably tell you the same thing or more, and I'm just really honored that you wanted to speak to me, and if I was helpful, I'm glad for it. So.
Yeah, you have an amazing journey, and I'm excited for people to listen to it. If you could just say goodbye to everyone out there listening.
Goodbye, adios, gracias.
Okay, thank you guys. Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music and give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.